Lunatics, Earthling. Hey, good afternoon, loyal listeners. It's the 58th podcast, and wow, we just lost to Florida Atlantic. Whoa. So, Wes is gone today. There's this holiday in Austin called Austin City Limits. Half of my office is already out of work for the whole week. So Wes is doing that as well. So he'll probably be back with us next week. But today, filling in, I've got Don, aka the Boss Man, the Dropper of Truth, football addict, and all-around good guy. Welcome to the podcast, man. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Very honored to be on this Cooler Chronicles podcast, number 58. Just trying to step in for the man, Wes. Westlake Wes.
Yep. Shout out to Westlake Wes.
He's doing his thing in Austin, so just trying to hold down the fort.
Yeah, for sure. So we got it rigged up, kind of ghetto here with the podcast. We had like 3 hours worth of technical difficulties. So doing what we can to get it out to y'all. Hopefully it doesn't sound too awful. We were trying to use Skype and it wasn't working. So yeah, we had to give it the runaround. But hopefully we'll be good now. So first up, we're just gonna try to figure out how UTSA lost to FAU. Hopefully we'll vent a little bit and get our emotions out. And then we'll look ahead to New Mexico, and we've got some really great listener questions that were submitted this week. So you guys that are asking questions, keep it up. Y'all are awesome. So Don, what was the main thing that you took away from this game? What was your main impression of UTSA's loss to Florida Atlantic?
Well, my main impression, or the thing that stood out to me the most, is that maybe we as fans and as a team kind of listened to the media a little bit too much, fed into it too much, and maybe we thought we were better than we actually are at this point in the season. Not taking anything away from FAU. They played a great game, but, UTSA didn't put a full four-quarter game together, and it bit us in the butt in the end.
Yeah, I guess I'm just kind of at the point now where I realize that UTSA probably is going to be a pretty mediocre team this season. So I'm having to, readjust my expectations and kind of step back a little bit. I think UTSA still has a ton of potential to be a great team and compete for the conference championship. But right now, like heading into this week, they're not a very good football team. And they're definitely not the team we expected them to be heading into the season.
That coming off that first win of the season against Houston, I think everyone's expectations of what could be went to another level. Then you had a really solid outing against Arizona at home, which, everybody thought it kind of solidified the fact that, okay, maybe we're a little bit better than we expected to be. Most of us expected to go up to Stillwater, not really win that game, get a little bit more competitive, but it was what it was. But after this past Saturday, you kind of just fell back down to earth. And like you say, this team, they still have a great chance of having a really good season. But at this point in time, they're pretty much an average team.
Yeah, and I think that this team has a lot more question marks than we expected. Something that we're going to hit on quite a bit is the offensive line. I know both me and you were in agreement that the offensive line should be a pretty strong unit for UTSA this year. They had 5 returning starters and 3, I think, returning 5-year seniors. And, just throughout the year, they're just getting rolled back, especially that center position. Nate Leonard has really struggled. What's your impression of the offensive line at this point in the season?
I completely agree with you. The two players that have been consistent from what I've seen have been Harris and Kavanaugh. They haven't been great. They haven't been world beaters, but they have been consistently good. You hit it on it. Nate Leonard, he is the QB of that offensive line. He makes all the calls. But unfortunately, so far this season, he hasn't been dominant. He has gotten, you know, pushed back. He's had trouble with, you know, anytime there's a defensive line right on top of him. He had the low snaps. So, you know, all in all, he has not had a good season so far. And then when you look at the right offensive tackle with Josh Walker, coming back, I think it was the Arizona game, he struggled also. Mm-hmm. And talking about Inskey, he was really good first 2 weeks of the season, first 2 games, and then against Oklahoma State. I don't know if he got beat up or got hurt, but, you know, it wasn't his best game, but you're going to get the Big 12 defensive line, you know, very strong, athletic, quick. So, you know, having some troubles is to be expected, but against FAU, just didn't look right. I know at the end of the game, he came up a little lame on that sack that, FAU got. I want to say on the drive before, we had the long, return by Cam Jones, and I know he came up lame holding his left elbow, but he didn't look right the whole game. He looked like he was already injured. So, I don't know if it's injuries or if, you know, I know Nate Leonard was injured in the spring. I don't know if that's having some lingering effects, but there's definitely been some aggression there.
Yeah, it's hard to pin down what the problem is because it's not like UTSA is going out and facing, like, offensive lines that are full of NFL prospects like Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I mean, Florida Atlantic was pretty solid up front, but it's nothing that UTSA shouldn't be able to handle and has handled in past years with less experience and with less size. It's baffling to me. I mean, especially Leonard's low snaps. I'm not going to, like, give Carter a pass because the low snaps, but it's hard for the guy to read the defense and to get into a flow and a rhythm when he's constantly having to bend down and collect the snap from his knee or from his ankle. And, I mean, I just don't understand how that happens for a senior.
When you lose count of how many low snaps there are, that means there's too many.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You know, you're not going to get part of a pass, but yeah. If you're counting low snaps and you lose count of how many there were in the game, that's just one too many for me. I don't understand it. I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah, you would think that.
Maybe he just got too used to Eric being so short. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. Or maybe Eric lines up a little closer to the quarterback. I don't know. But another thing that surprised me is that you would think with two, you know, good size, bulky, strong running backs that UTSA would have success running between the tackles. And, you know, some of it is play calling. It seems like once it gets established, they get away from it. So they're not able to really assert dominance and just pound between the tackles. But, I mean, UTSA has not rushed for over 4 yards in a game since Houston. So that's 3 games in a row now where they've rushed for under 4 yards in a row, for 4 yards per rush. And if you can't rush for 4 yards per carry against Florida Atlantic, then you're probably not going to be able to do it against many teams in the conference, and you're not going to win many games playing football like that.
Agreed. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's the constant switching in and out of the running backs and not really being able to find a groove. I mean, at any level of football, you know, for a running back, they've got to be in tune with their offensive line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have a back that's your feature back and they're getting, you know, 18, 20 carries a game, which Glasgow is getting, but he's getting them at, you know, he's in the game for 3 plays and he's out for 6 or whatever the case may be. It's hard to really get into a flow. That's just my personal opinion. Now, I know the coaches, you know, UTSA coaches don't see that because they do it at the running back position, they do it at wide receiver. And this year, the offense just hasn't seemed like they've been able to get into a rhythm in any of the 4 games that they've already played. And at the running back position, it's just, you know, you got to be able to feel what your offensive line is doing and where those holes are going to be, you know, week in and week out. Because, not, you know, every defense is going to be different every game. So it takes a, you know, a drive or two to kind of fill it out. But when you're in for 2 or 3 plays and then you're out for another 4 or 5, I don't see how you get into a rhythm.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this isn't just a problem with the running backs. I think this is a problem that goes all with the wide receivers and the running backs and the OL and everything. It's like UTSA subs so much. It's they don't have an identity. They don't have a lot of leadership. They don't have a go-to playmaker. And these are things that you need to have to compete for a conference championship, you know? I understand, you know, reasonable substitutions, but I think UTSA is taking it too far, and they need to leave Cam Jones on the field, and I think they need to leave Jarvial on the field, and let those guys get yards, get confidence, get into a flow, and just be able to go to them whenever you need them.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of the questions from one of the listeners was, you know, asking, you know, what's the optimal lineup? I don't even know.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what the optimal best lineup is, you know, at least on the offensive side of the ball, because we don't see enough of those guys on the field long enough to really say, hey, this is the group that's, you know, going to be able to take the ball, go down the field, you know, week in and week out. And if that person needs a blow, you're first in line. You know, I couldn't even begin. Now, we didn't sit here and we can speculate and assume that it's Cam Jones and Aaron Grubb and, you know, Kerry Thomas and whoever else at the wide receiver position. And then, you know, of course, John Leon needs to get his touches. He's the most dynamic back we have. Brandon Armstrong needs to get his touches also.
Oh, absolutely.
He's almost been non-existent since he came back from the injury. So, I mean, I don't know. Options have really held this offensive side of the ball back. But I don't know if we're going to see a change anytime soon.
Yeah, it's just so hard to pick out a quick fix for this offense. I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, we'll just put Bogenschutz in, and Bogenschutz is going to jumpstart the offense. But, you know, that's not realistic either, because the kid's going to have an adjustment period, and he's going to have problems that Carter is not having, and, you know, he just needs to get a feel for it. So even if you, even in a perfect world where Bogey is the answer at quarterback, it's still not going to be a quick fix. There's still going to be an adjustment period, and, you know, nothing's going to be easy for this offense. For various reasons.
I mean, the QB position, of course, there's issues there, but there are so many other issues on the offensive side of the ball that just changing that position is not going to solve them all.
Yep, exactly. You know, and I think something that we'll probably spend some time on this too, but I think UTSA's play calling hasn't done them a lot of favors this year. I know I myself and other fans have complained that it seems like the offense is trying to be too cute too often. Where, you know, they'll have their run game set up, or they're hitting quick slant passes, something like that, and then they want to stop the momentum of the offense and do a flea flicker or a double reverse or some crap like that. And, you know, it just doesn't show a lot of confidence in the offense to march down the field. And if UTSA was totally overmatched and they needed some crazy plays to move the ball, okay, that's one thing, but UTSA has shown that they can move the ball against teams like Florida Atlantic, and they can move the ball against Arizona. Mm. So why are you going to stop what works and try to throw some crazy shit out there? You know, I don't understand it. It's too often, you know. If you run one or two gadget plays a game, that's fine. I understand. Mm. But it seems like UTSA is running five or six, sometimes more than that.
Yeah, I don't understand it myself. The Wildcat makes no sense. Especially when the defense knows what's coming. You haven't passed out of it, so you're not fooling anybody. You know, you run a double reverse, and I think it was needing 2 or 3 yards on that play. You run a double reverse, and you lose yardage. You know, it didn't make sense. But, you know, I don't know if it's not necessarily, the quarterback not knowing the offensive playbook, or if there's just certain plays that just cannot run and be efficient. I really don't know, because if you've noticed, the playbook has actually been dialed back.
Back. As the season progresses, before. Yes, I agree.
Coming out of the bye week, I expected to see more out of the offensive play calling. And it was about the same as it's been the first 3 weeks. The only thing that I remember seeing two or three plays that I remember seeing that we hadn't seen before. One was a quick option in the first quarter where Brandon Armstrong and Jarvin were in the backfield together. Armstrong went in motion, and it was a, you know, quick option to the short side of the field. They got maybe like 2 or 3 yards. Then the play where Cole dropped the pass on that play action pass. We hadn't seen that yet this year. And then the pass to Matt on that last TD drive in the fourth quarter, In the third quarter, we haven't seen that play before. But most of the plays that they're running over and over again. They try to run them in different offensive formations, but it's the same play. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, but as far as running the gimmick plays, you just kill your offensive flow and your offensive, you know, they're drive killers.
Yeah, I guess and I forgot to mention.
If you're in second and three, or third and two, or third and one, and you can't line up in an I formation to get a first down, against Florida Atlantic, there's something wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I forgot to mention at the beginning of the podcast, in all fairness, I was not able to watch this game. It's the first UTSA game I've ever missed. I was at a wedding, so screw everyone that ever gets married in the fall. It's football season. You know, we've got a million other weeks, days for you to get married. Don't do it on a Saturday in the fall, please. But I didn't watch the game, but I know Don's watched it like 5 or 6 times, so he's going to be able to fill me in on a lot that I missed. So I don't know if you remember this, but last year against UTEP, it was UTSA's first conference game, and I believe they were also coming off of a bye for that game as well. Do you remember?
Yeah.
So I remember that UTSA just came out with a wide open playbook. They had, I think, two or three different play action plays that I'd never seen before. They had a couple of brand new formations that struck me by surprise. So I was expecting UTSA to come out and do the same against FAU, and instead it just seems like they kind of had a muddled game plan that nothing really worked out for.
Well, in the first half, it was the same old, the same stuff they ran against Houston, the same stuff they ran against Arizona, the same stuff they ran against Oklahoma State. FAU was prepared for it, and they really weren't able to get anything done. The two short drives they had to begin the game off, you know, off the turnovers, you know, you should score when you get the ball inside your opponent's 30-yard line. But as soon as they had to drive the field, the playbook was just, you know, the play calling itself was horrendous. And you had 3 or 4 straight 3-and-outs. You had 2 of those drives where Tucker almost threw interceptions, or in my mind, they would have been pick 6 if the defense had caught. So, I mean, as bad as the first half was, it wasn't all Tucker Carter's fault, but, you know, the play calling itself was pretty bad, only because it's so repetitive. I mean, there's nothing that I've seen that causes the defense to adjust.
Yeah, I'm generally okay with a narrow playbook. There are a lot of triple option teams out there that have been successful for the past 50 years by running like 3 or 4 different plays a game. So I think if you can execute and you know when to call the right play and to catch the defense off guard, I think with a really small playbook, you can be really successful. But I think UTSA's problem is not the number of plays they run. I think it's the timing of the plays that they run.
I do agree with that.
To run Wildcat on 3rd and 1 from the opponent's 10-yard line, that's just a bad play call. It's just not smart. You can telegraph a play in the middle of the field, but not in the red zone.
Yeah, why are you running a Wildcat? Why don't you just line up, Nashard fullback, whether it's Glasswell Williams at the tailback, and run it down their throat? I don't understand it. I don't understand why you're going to go to a formation that you haven't not thrown out of, with you know, the one player that the opposing team has probably singled out as this is their so-called playmaker. You know he's getting the ball.
Yeah.
You know he's going to be the one that's going to get the ball when the ball is snapped, and is more likely going to run with it. All you got to do is tell the 11 guys on defense key on him. So I don't understand how you're going to make that play call and think it's going to be successful. I mean, That's very amateur, you know, for a seasoned offensive coordinator who's making play calls. So, I don't know. Mind-boggling to me, my friend.
I think what it all comes back to, and this is something that I kind of realized recently, you know, I don't think that Tucker Carter is a bad quarterback by any means. I think that he would be incredibly successful for a team that runs a pro-style offense with, you know, some talented tall receivers, and a team that can consistently run the ball to set up play action. But UTSA doesn't have any of that. That's the complete opposite of UTSA's what they want to be their identity on offense. Right. They want to have small, fast receivers run the option, keep the game, you know, horizontal with the line of scrimmage. So I feel like recruiting Carter was the only mistake, you know. Carter shouldn't be in this position. He should be playing for a team that can utilize his strengths. Or UTSA could have changed the playbook and the formations to better fit what Carter could bring to the table.
Yeah, you're right. Now, we're a read option team. We've been a read option team from the very beginning. You know, multiple offense, whatever you want to call it, but we're not a pro style, and that is his strength. Now, I do know that when he was at Trinity Valley, they ran somewhat of a multiple read option offense, but he wasn't asked to really run the ball. But in this offense, the quarterback needs to be a threat. And if the quarterback's not a threat, then your run game and everything that you know comes off of it is just going to be ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Because I think whenever UTSA's offense doesn't have that threat to run at quarterback, it can help the defense just stifle out to the flats and really shut down all the possibilities out there, because that's where UTSA had most of their success with Eric Sosa, Evans Okacha last year was, mm-hmm. you know, option plays that hit the corner, bubble screens, jailbreak screens, just, you know, that kind of stuff. But if the defense isn't stacking up the middle to watch out for the quarterback run, then it's a lot easier to sniff out that stuff on the outside.
Yeah, but you also can't call, you know, a bubble screen or you know, a flare out, you know, to the 15. You know, there have been, you know, there have been some really bad play calls this year. I mean, we can all agree to that. And until the fact that, like you said, he's a pro-style quarterback, we run a read option, multiple-style offense, something's got to change. Because if it doesn't, we're going to continue to have the same problem. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen on Saturday. We continue to run the same things, and we continue to have the same problems. Going to a ball game this year would be
a challenge.
A realistic goal.
Yeah, it really is. And there's some debate up there amongst fans over whether or not this New Mexico game is a must-win game or not. I don't think it is, but I think that if you lose it, then it's going to be pretty damn hard to get into a bowl game. So I think that makes it a must-win when you look at it from that perspective.
Well, I don't think it's a must-win from as far as wins and losses. I think it's more of a must-win for the psyche of this team.
Yeah, I think...
You go down 1-4...
That's big, especially with such high expectations.
You lost to New Mexico. That's kind of hard. That would be hard for that team to come back from. That's just my opinion. Because last year, when they lost that game to Houston, I mean, it lingered all the way to Rice. They went to Huntington, and they got thoroughly beat. Even though, you know, they played a pretty good second half. But they got, you know, they went in there, and Marshall popped them in the mouth, and it took a while for them to recover, but that lasted until the next week, which was Rice, and we really didn't play well until late into the third quarter, when the team finally woke up and thought they had a chance, and you know, a little too late. I don't know if they'll be able to bounce back from losing Arizona, Oklahoma State, FAU, and New Mexico all in a row. That's you know, then you start wondering about you know how good are we?
Oh, I'm already there. I'm already on that stage.
Yeah,
I'm curious to see if UTSA is going to come out with some confidence and some swag against New Mexico, because if I'm on that team, I'm having a hard time having some faith in this team's ability to win a championship with the results they've gotten so far.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
So, a question that I've been pondering, and I think that I know what should have been the answer, but I'm not in the coach's head, so I can't say for sure. But right before the end of the first half against Florida Atlantic, I think UTSA had like 3 seconds on a play from midfield. And finally, a good play call. UTSA went for the Hail Mary. Kenny Harrison broke off deep from the left hash on a streak, and Carter rolled out away from pressure, got set, and just hurled the ball up into the end zone. And Harrison came down with the Hail Mary that gave UTSA a lead heading at halftime. So obviously that was a great play, and Tucker did an awesome job. That's probably his best play as a Roadrunner. But do you think that saved him from getting benched and from Bogenschutz coming in to start the second half?
I think it was really close. I think that leash had to be short. Mm-hmm. There's no way after the way that first half went that the coaches weren't thinking about it. I mean, if you're asking me, did it save him from getting in? Yes, it did. It did. Because if we went to the halftime down and that Hail Mary wasn't completed, I think coming out of the half, there's a very good chance we would have seen Bogey. But he may have been on a one series leash also. He may have come, the coach may say, hey, you're going to go in with no guarantee that he was going to play the whole entire second half.
True. Because so, in the Oklahoma State game, in the Oklahoma State game, Carter was injured, so he wasn't going to come in for sure.
Exactly. So, if he comes in and you give him a series, what happens if he goes in that first series and it's 3-and-out? Do you stick with him for another series or do you go back? It's a hard decision to make because my whole thing is once you bench Carter, you've got to be able to say, hey, it's Bogey's team. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be too hard to go back to him. I think his confidence would be shot.
Yeah,
if you ask me, I think his confidence is somewhat shot already. I mean, he had a great second half against FAU, but I don't think his confidence is all that high right now. We're in a 3-game losing streak. He hasn't played that great. He hasn't played terribly bad the whole season. But he's been too up and down. Mm-hmm.
And, like you said, I don't think that there's a game where you can go look at the score box if you're, say that you're a New Mexico fan and you want to see what's up with this new quarterback. I mean, I think if you go through the box score, this guy is just completely average. He's just completely mediocre. And there's no game that he's played that would make you think otherwise.
No. You got to you look at the, box scores and stats and whatnot. And, as a New Mexico fan, you would think, oh, we got a legitimate shot.
Oh, yeah. And they do. They do.
Yeah,
Okay, so before we... go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you can be a game manager if you have a defense that's just, lights out. If you maybe get 10 to 14 points, you got a chance to win. And as good as our defense is, they're not there yet, obviously. And we don't have a person right now at the quarterback position that can go and win a game for us.
Yeah, I completely agree.
He's not going to, there's a big difference between that. Being a game manager and being someone that say, we're putting the game on your shoulders, go and win for us.
And
I don't think that's the kind of quarterback we have.
Carter made a great throw and a great read, extended the play on that last play against Florida Atlantic. But even if Marcellus Mack would have been able to hang on to that ball, it wouldn't have been Carter that won that game. It would have been Cam Jones with his kick return that set it up.
The kick return.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the way that Carter is. He's not some big-time playmaker. He's not going to pull 50-yard gains out of his ass like Sosa did. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, Bogey will be able to do. We'll see when that day comes. But, you were saying about when you can and cannot be a game manager, I think something that hurts Carter as well is he doesn't have a lot of home run threats. We're going to talk about Cam Jones a little bit later. That was a listener question that we got. But I just don't think any guy on this offense is just that home run threat. Lucky Whitehead for Florida Atlantic, he was that home run threat, and we saw that against Florida Atlantic. And I don't think anyone on UT's offense is playing at that level right now.
The one player that we, talked about earlier that I think could be that type of player is Brandon Armstrong.
Right.
We just haven't seen enough of him. Previous 3 years, he's had more than enough electric plays. I mean, I can remember the one against Tulane and the one against UTEP. There have been plays that Brandon has made that have been electrifying, and you can, make the case that, they're playmaker-type plays. But as far as at the wide receiver position, and right now even at the running back position, even though every time it's like Jarvis Young gets the ball, he might break one if he doesn't trip.
I wanted to talk about his tripping problem.
there's nobody on the offensive side of the ball right now that you can just say, hey, We're going to line you up. We're giving you the ball. We need you to make a play. We don't have that player right now.
Yeah.
And if we do, they must be sitting on a bench somewhere.
And John Otwell is listening live right now. Thanks for listening, John. We appreciate your tweet. So he suggested David Morgan. And David Morgan's definitely been the best player for this offense, I think. But I don't think that he's liable to score a touchdown on any touch that he gets. You know what I mean? Because he's a great receiver.
No, but he needs to be fed more, though.
Oh, absolutely.
They need to find more creative ways to get him open.
Right. And even if it's just throwing up the jump ball, I think you won't have a problem going up and getting that thing. The kid's just got to stay healthy.
But see, that's just it. You want to find ways to get him open, not get him killed. I mean, you throw it up, he's liable to get, he's liable to get hit by a safety or a linebacker while he's in midair, but, he's kind of fragile, but, they've got to find ways to keep feeding that guy because he is without a doubt the best offensive threat we have right now.
Yep. So, wrap him in bubble wrap. If you see him on campus, if any students are listening to this.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about Jarvion's tripping problem because I just, off the top of my head, I can think of at least three or four plays where Jarvion had nothing but grass ahead of him and the kid's blazing fast, 4-5, 40-yard dash or something like that. And the guy just trips and eats dirt all the time. I don't get it. Yeah. Do you have a theory for that?
No, I don't. And the thing is he's not the only one. Have you noticed it also happened to Cam Jones? It's happened to Cam also. It happened on kickoff returns. It's also happened on, when he gets bubble screens or, inside wide receiver screens. Sometimes he catches the ball, he starts to take off, and all of a sudden he loses the swing. I don't know if it's the cleats, the size of the cleats, something. They got to figure it out. Because on that kickoff return to FAU, Jarvion was gone. He had nothing but daylight in front of him. And I know the grass case way, but that is no excuse. Tripping on a potential touchdown run.
Do you think it's a mental thing, or do you think it just comes down to something mechanically or equipment wise?
I think it's shoes.
Yeah,
honestly, I think it's shoes. And the fact that they have to wear Adidas, I'm not the biggest fan of Adidas cleats. I mean, most of you guys know my son plays for Taft, and I bought him a. I'm not going to say how much it was, but a very expensive pair of Adidas cleats last year, and he didn't wear them. He wore them one game, and he said that he just couldn't wear them. He just didn't feel comfortable with them. So he ended up getting a pair of Nikes and wore Nikes for the rest of the year. So I have some expensive, custom-made freaking Adidas that he didn't wear. It was a waste of money, but... I just don't think the Adidas cleats are the easiest to play in. This year he's wearing Under Armour. He said they're wider, they're more comfortable, the footing is better. So I just think it's the cleat, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I personally wore Under Armour cleats as well. Kind of unorthodox because they don't have many shoes that they carry, but I have a really wide foot, so that Under Armour cleat was perfect for me and always had a really good grip, especially when I played on natural grass.
Yeah, that was the reason why he was done on was because it was wide.
Right, yeah.
He has a wide foot also. He just said it just felt better. He felt like he had better traction, better control than of course, the Adidas cleats they have, but a little bit better than the Nike also. But, not that it was, they are free, but, I bet you if he had the opportunity to wear something different, he probably would.
Yeah. It would be interesting to look across the country because a lot of different teams are wearing these same cleats. They're the Addy Zeros, I believe is what they're called. I wonder if this is a nationwide like tripping thing because I don't watch the same team like 4 weeks in a row, so I wouldn't notice it. So I don't know. I think it's pretty interesting that the two fastest guys on the team have been tripping more than any of the other ones.
Yeah. There's no way that it can be a coincidence that, there's gotta be something with the cleats they wear. Gotta be. But hey, they gotta figure something out because we can't keep leaving touchdowns and points on the field.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. All right. So we're going to get into some New Mexico talk here in a second, but, we got a couple more listener questions that I want to get to before we get into New Mexico. We kind of talk about Cam Jones a little bit. Just to hit on that as well, it seemed like Cam just kind of ran out of gas on that kick return to get chased down by a kicker. Did it seem like he just got gas to you, a conditioning problem?
I think he definitely was gas. And getting caught by a kicker is never good when you're supposed to be one of the fastest players on the team. But, you know, we haven't seen Cam really break away from anybody yet this year. He had the nice run against Arizona. But even on that run, he had to dive to get to that end zone.
Yeah, that's true.
He didn't run in there. He had to dive to get there because they were right on top of him. I don't know if he's added some weight. I know he missed a lot in the spring, and I'm not sure how much he did in the summer, so I don't know if his conditions is a factor. But, you know, Cam, he's had a rough season so far. A lot of the plays that they're calling for him is not helping either, though.
Right.
You know, putting him in the Wildcat's not helping. Every time you see him go in motion and start to head back behind the quarterback, it's one or two plays. They're either going to hand it to him, or the quarterback is going to fake a dive, turn, and pass it to him, you know, on a flare.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's
predictable.
It's so predictable. And by the time the ball gets there, he really doesn't have a chance to really do anything. And, you know, it's sad to see that they're not utilizing the talent that they have by being a little bit more creative with the play call.
I completely agree with you about the possibility of a conditioning or a weight gain, because one play that has stuck out to me through the whole season has been when Cam, you know, had a handoff through a jet sweep against Oklahoma State. Ryan Simmons you already know what play I'm talking about. He had read that motion, and he was over almost on the left hash. So Cam had like a 10-yard head start on a middle linebacker that weighs like 250 pounds. Well. And Ryan Simmons, at about 250, caught up to Cam, and I think got him at the line of scrimmage or behind it. And that is just not the Cam Jones that we saw the past 3 years.
No, that was a telling play right there. You're correct, my friend. I vividly remember that play, and I was surprised that Simmons was able to catch himself. I mean, Simmons is a great linebacker. Don't get me wrong, but there is absolutely no way Cam Jones last year, I think, gets caught by him. You have that, like, you know, like I said, with 18-yard, you know, lead on him, and I just don't see that happening. But hey, it is what it is. I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
I honestly don't have an answer. I don't know. Think about that play. You know, I forgot about that play. Thinking about that. Didn't he also be caught on the reverse also?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, I don't know what the issue is with his speed or conditioning or whatever you want to call it, but, you know, it's definitely not the same as it has been the past 3 years.
Yeah, I don't know if it's getting to the point now where the coaches need to be like, okay, well, Cam's not producing the way that he used to, so we need to stop drawing up plays for him. I think that's probably jumping the gun a little bit, because he did have that awesome kick return, and he has made some decent plays this year. So it's just hard to get away from Cam when you've leaned on him for so long. Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with them running the same plays that they always run for him, and that it's predictable is what people see on film. So it's easier for them to defend it. I mean, if you can honestly run the same plays for the same players, you know, all you really do is try to change, you know, switch up a formation, or you run a different motion before the play begins to try to disguise what you're trying to do. It's not working. So, I mean, that's the way I see it. You know, they may need to, you know, maybe a play they will normally run for Grubb or, you know, for Matt. You know, run Cam on an 8-yard stop route. What's wrong with that?
I think that the coaches see him as a poor route runner, which is probably true in some sense.
Oh, he is.
But, you know, he's not that bad where you can't run a wide receiver route for him. Like, he can do some stuff. I mean, come on now. So, I think that...
If you line up in a defensive back is giving you an 8 to 10 yard cushion.
Just stand there and catch the ball. Absolutely, man.
Just get the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
Don't get the ball in his hands without him having to run, you know, 15, 20 yards from where he's lined up and stay in front of the quarterback and try to go the opposite direction. He's already run about 20 yards before he even starts trying to hit upfield.
Yeah, I would love to see, I don't know if UTSA keeps this stat or not, but number of missed tackles created. Because I feel like across the board, UTSA's entire offense has created very few missed tackles. And I think Cam is going to see a huge drop from his 2013 to his 2014 elusiveness, so to speak, for broken tackles.
I don't think we get yak yards.
No one's getting yak yards in this offense.
No. You know, if anyone is David Glasgow.
Yep, for sure. He's
the only person I can think of that's probably getting 80 yards after contact, maybe jogging on a little bit, but the receivers are so much, they're such a big part of the running game with all the jet sweeps and, you know, and things that we do, they've got to be if they get some yards after contact. And this year is just non-existent.
Yeah, let's just talk about the wide receivers as a whole. This is another listener question. It seems to me that unit has degressed more than any other unit on this team. There was a coaching change there, and I don't think that's something that it doesn't really seem like too many other people really took into account. It seems like it's made a big impact because, you know, UTSA kind of went cheap with that hire, and they got a no-name guy that hasn't coached in like 3 years, and now they're getting crappy results. So I think that it's a fair question to ask if Marquise Mosley is the guy for this job, because the wide receivers have looked pretty bad this season. And I think it's blocking, I think it's route running, I think it's catching, because there's been a ton of drops. The wide receivers just look unpolished, unprepared. It's really frustrating to watch, because they were so sharp last season in all aspects of the game.
Yeah, you're right. One of the biggest things I've seen is that they don't block as well as they did in previous years. And I think that right there has hurt the option game, any types of runs that outside of the jet sweeps or whatnot, because in the past, you knew whoever that receiver was on play side was going to get their block. And now it's not the same. And like I said, there's one too many drops. Of course, the pick six against FAU was a tip pass. Now, I'm not gonna give a pass on Carter or Harrison. I don't think they were on the same page. It looked like Harrison stopped his route, and Carter thought he was gonna keep running, kind of led him. But it is what it is. It's a drop tip pass, you know. And there's been plenty of those.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if Mosley is the problem, but the group as a whole, as a wide receiver core, is not as strong as it has been in the past. And, you know, like I said, it was a cheap hire. I don't know. But that's the world that we have to live in, because we unfortunately don't have the budget to go out and get someone that's, you know, has a little bit better resume. So, you know, it is what it is.
All right, well, we're about to hit the 45-minute mark here. Seems it's gone by pretty fast. These podcasts feel a lot faster after a loss, because I'll be all riled up and pissed off and just start ranting, and time just starts to fly. But before we hit the New Mexico, I've got one more question for you. Where does this Florida Atlantic loss rank in the list of disappointing losses for UTSA?
For UTSA, probably number 3. For me, it's me number 2. McMurray will always be that, you know, at least for the next couple of years, it'll be that loss that everyone remembers. You know, we should have won that game, of course. And then for me, it's number 2, but it's really a toss-up between Houston last year. That was the first game against the FBS opponent that we really thought we were going to win. We thought, you know, this is the moment. And in the third quarter hit, and we all know what happened after that, six turnovers or whatever it was. But this game last Saturday, I just keep saying, what will we all be talking about now? We're all pretty upset right now about the fact that we're 1-3. What if we hadn't beaten Houston?
Oh, man.
And we
That's
hard to
think about.
0-3. We would be 0-4 right now.
Oh, man. That's just brutal to think about it, man.
That's a bad thought.
Oh, good Lord.
You know? Yeah. And I wanted this game for other reasons, but I just thought that, you know, this game, first conference game, against an opponent that on paper and from what we have, you know, beating Houston and what, you know, what the expectations were, this was somewhat of a statement game to let the rest of the conference know, hey, yeah, we lost, you know, we barely lost to Arizona. We went up Stillwater, is a pretty good Big 12 team. And yes, we lost, but we're much better than what everyone thinks we are. You know, we are still the team to beat in the West. And we didn't show that on Saturday. You know, and I think that, you know, the rest of the, at least the Western, rest of the Western Division, now is probably looking at it as it like, okay, well, you know, they were, you know, picked to be one of the, you know, top two teams in our division, and they look pretty mediocre right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but thankfully, it seems like the rest of the division is kind of in that same boat, because UNT, they have had a lot of offensive struggles, made a change at quarterback, so that might jumpstart them. Big test against Indiana, so we'll see how that goes. And then Rice and Louisiana Tech are the other two big contenders. Louisiana Tech just lost to an FCS team, and then Rice is winless, and or they actually just beat Southern Miss last week, but they lost to Old Dominion. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think the West is a total toss-up right now. UTSA should still be able to win it.
Thank God it's a toss-up right now.
Oh, I know. I think if we would be in the East, we would be looking at like a fourth-place, third-place finish in the East.
Yeah. It used to be very competitive. You know, that Western game later on down the line, you know, that got me really worried.
Oh, man. I think
I'll cross that bridge when we get there, though.
Yeah, I think Brandon Daughtry is going to pass for about, you know, 700 yards against UTSA, give or take. Oh, it's going to be rough.
Yeah, I'll work about that when we get there.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about New Mexico a little bit. I know that I watched the Fresno State game from last week. Mm-hmm. I think that you watched a little bit of that one as well.
Yes, I did.
Cool. So, I mean, we faced New Mexico last year, so we kind of know what we're going to see from them. It's same coach, same system. Crazy old man Bob Davey still in there running the show. So the triple option is going to be coming at us. But I think the difference for New Mexico, and they're clearly a little bit better this year, in my opinion. But I think the difference for them is they have three legitimate playmakers at running back now, and I think their quarterbacks have progressed a ton.
They have. They got a three-headed monster at running back. All those guys are good runners, are tough. We talked about it earlier before the podcast that, Gombe last week against Fresno, by the, almost the end of the third quarter, already had 22 carries for 143 yards. Now, I know Fresno State defense is, you know, pretty low in college football rankings, but still, 22 carries for 143 yards is 22 carries for 143 yards. I don't care who it's against. And that wasn't even a full game. Hmm. So, you know, they're gonna run it. They're gonna run the same thing over and over and over again. And it is successful. If they could pass the ball a little bit, they would be a really dangerous team. Now, you know, from what I understand, starting quarterback Gouch is going to be back.
Yeah, he's expected to play.
We could see all three of the quarterbacks on Saturday also.
Right. And we were both impressed with their freshman quarterback, Lamar Jordan. He's a Texas quarterback, of course. And the kid looked pretty solid. You know, he was really in control of that offense, ran the option really well. I think he's already thrown for like 7 touchdowns this year. And he's only attempted like 15 passes or something like that. So he does have a surprisingly good arm, and, you know, he's got a lot of moxie. So I think that Gaucho's going to play, but I would not be surprised if Lamar Jordan gets the majority of the snaps.
I wouldn't be surprised either. I heard what Bob Davies said, I guess after the loss against Fresno State, that they would have started Jordan, but being a true freshman, they decided to start Meacham, who is the other quarterback that we may see, and put Jordan on the headset. So he could hear the coaches, making the calls and talking to the players and just kind of get a somewhat feel for the game in the beginning, just so that way he could, just be brought into the game without everything just hitting him right off the bat.
Right.
You know, he is a true freshman, sometimes, nerves or the game being too fast, you never know, what the case may be with a true freshman. So I just wanted to kind of ease him into the game. But once he got in there and as the game progressed, you could definitely see that the kid was not afraid. He made good reads. And you could tell that he obviously was an option quarterback. And like you said, I would not be surprised if he ends up getting the bulk of the snaps on Saturday. The kid is good.
For sure.
And he's not going to throw the ball a lot. But he, from what I could see, was pretty accurate. And he makes the right read of knowing when they're running that triple option to step back and throw it downfield. You know, he picks, he was very smart when he picked and chose to throw the ball. And that's what you got to have with a quarterback in that system. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens on Saturday.
Yeah, coming into the season, I thought this home game against New Mexico was one of the easier games on the slate. I thought this is, going to be the blowout game where all the freshmen get to come in and play. And I don't think that anymore. I think right now Vegas has the spread at 17 points, and I think that's really, really high. UTSA is going to have to make some ginormous, just heralded changes on offense to be able to score that big of a scoring or of a point differential. Right now New Mexico has losses to UTEP, to Arizona State, Fresno State, and they beat New Mexico State. But I think that's kind of misleading because New Mexico has played really, really tough against all those teams, and it seems like they just didn't really get the breaks they needed to come out with wins against UTEP and against Fresno State. That Fresno State score is really misleading because Fresno State didn't really start opening up and scoring points until the fourth quarter. So this is a tough team. Yeah, it's a tough team. They're going to hang around. UTSA is going to have to stuff it down in the middle, which I think they will, because I think 22 of New Mexico's first rushes against Fresno State, 16 of them were dives to the A-gap. So UTSA has got really big, strong defensive tackles, so they're going to have to get in there, shut it down, hopefully force the freshman, Lamar Jordan, to play on outside on the edge in the option game and make them pass more than they're comfortable with. So it's going to be interesting, for sure. I hope that UTSA can run the ball against them because they're giving up like 6.6 yards per carry. So if UTSA can't run
for over 200 yards, something's wrong.
Yeah, if UTSA doesn't run for 5 yards a carry, I'm going to be pissed and really scared for this team. And if they lose, man.
Blow it all up.
Blow it all up. Put all the freshmen in there.
Blow it all up. Blow it all up. If you're sitting at 1-4, yeah. I mean, realistically, they're not going to blow it up. Even if you do lose, you still got the other, seven conference games to go. That's to be 1-4, to lose to FAU and to New Mexico, God forbid, would be, I don't even think I had it that bad in any of my preseason predictions.
Oh, no, but, I don't think anyone did.
Seriously, though. They should be able to run for, anywhere from 4 to 5 yards per carry against this team. Oh. They run a weird front. They start off in a three lineman front, but almost every play they end up with 4 to 5 guys on the line.
They're
kind of high on number 45, the hybrid linebacker that they have. You'll see him come up on the line. You'll see him put his hand in the ground. You'll see him drop back and get into coverage. I mean, he's a lot like our dog safety. He's a little bit bigger and, will put his hand down. And, but, they're gonna, They're gonna try to fill all gaps by bringing people up if they think it's gonna be a run. If they think it's gonna be a pass, they're gonna rush three. Tucker's gonna have time. You know, when it's an obvious pass play, unless they blitz, he should be able to pick and choose where he wants to go with the ball. This is gonna be a real telling game for him and for this offense as a whole. You know, they should be able to really run the ball down their throat whenever they want because they're pretty small up front. And you know, as far as passing, you know, he hopefully if the offensive line stays up to par, Tucker should have more enough time to pick and choose where he wants to go with that football on Saturday.
Yeah, so hopefully he'll be looking deep because I'm not too impressed with New Mexico's cornerbacks. One of their starters,
hey, Kenny Bias, baby,
Kenny Bias is back. The speed is back on the field.
He's back, baby.
So
speed is back.
One of New Mexico's starting cornerbacks, he's the younger brother of former Roadrunner Eric Brown, Isaiah, pulled his hamstring. So I'm not sure what his status is for this game. But the fact that they were starting, I'm not sure if he's a sophomore or a freshman. So he was starting at that age. It's probably a good sign for UTSA if he's out. And also Saquon Edwards is their other starting cornerback, and he's a converted wide receiver. So he's solid. He's really athletic, but he's definitely beatable, especially on double moves. So I like UTSA's chances to open up the passing game. Carter, for his sake, really needs a great passing game. I would love to see him complete 70%, have a couple touchdown tosses. So please, please.
Yeah, so would I. I mean, Brown is going to be out. Is that right? He's out.
Okay.
But I think, aren't there maybe like two or three other defensive players that are, I know they were dropping like five against Fresno State.
Right.
They had about four people on the defensive side of the ball that got hurt. I think two of them didn't come back. Brown was one of them, but I know for a fact that he is out on Saturday. But, this game is, not only saying it's a statement game or anything like that, which, it technically is, but for the offensive side of the ball, this has got to be the game where they say, hey, we put everything together. We finally have a breakout game. I'd like to see, 400 yards of offense, 30-plus points on the scoreboard, and not 10 points handed to you from turnovers.
Yep.
Turnovers would be great. I'll take them. But I want to see an offense that goes out there on Saturday and imposes its will on the defense that's in front of them. That's what I want to see. We haven't seen that yet. We've seen that for one drive against Houston.
Is that that third quarter? That third quarter drive?
That third quarter.
Yep.
They imposed their will on Houston's defense and said, this is what we're going to do. You stop it.
Yes, sir. Couldn't have said it better.
They have not been able to do that yet. Again, they haven't reproduced a drive like that again, and I like to see, especially against a team like New Mexico, I like to see them do that. I like to see them, I like to see Tucker in that offense and Kevin Brown be able to go into that game and say, this is what we're going to do, we're going to execute, and, they're not going to be able to stop us. They shouldn't be able to stop us.
Oh, well, one thing I'm concerned about from the New Mexico defense is they do run that three-man front, and Nate Leonard has really, really struggled with blocking nose tackles. So I was specifically watching New Mexico's nose tackle against Fresno State, and he was a tough little dude, man. He was really physical, used his hands well at the line of scrimmage, had some, like, borderline late hits. He's going to let the offense know where he is on the field. I think that he got hurt, and I'm not sure if he came back into the game or not because I didn't watch the end of the fourth quarter. So I'm not sure what his status is, but I think Nate will struggle to block that guy because he's struggled all year against those zero techs and one techs. So that's something to look out for.
Well, I think they're going to have to give him help. But you had pointed out to me earlier that they like to blitz a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, if they're blitzing, how much help can you really give them? And then last thing, you cannot have your center getting beat with the type of offense that we run. Because penetration kills almost everything that we do because most of our running plays are slow developing.
Right.
That's just the way it is.
It doesn't matter what play.
I've talked about it with Craven, I don't know how many times that it seems like it takes forever. Even when we're in shotgun, from the ball to get from the center to the quarterback to the running back, it's going to take so much longer than it should. And if you get penetration, especially straight up the middle, that blows everything up.
I don't care what play you're running. If your A-gap is not secure, you're not going to have success against any defense in any form or fashion. You have to secure the middle of the field. That's just basic football stuff. Nate Leonard needs to step up because he's not going to get pulled. These coaches are too loyal to these seniors. Nate's too big of a face, so he just got to play better. It's just that simple.
Do you think the coaching staff is too loyal?
Oh, man, it's sure easy to say that.
You really want to go down that road?
Yeah, you want to go down that? We need to wrap up this podcast. I don't know if we want to go an extra hour.
I don't know if we want to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, so, you know, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out. But, man, I would sure like to see some of our young athletes.
Later date, huh?
Yeah, if we miss a bowl game, we'll come in that one strong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, John just asked if we had noticed that his snaps have been low all season. We talked about that at the beginning of the podcast, so if you want to go back and listen to the MP3 later, you can hear us discuss that. So, do you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, they've been really low.
Oh, man, nice. So, Florida Atlantic and Florida International are playing in the Shula Bowl tonight, and they had a lightning delay at halftime, so they're going to come back and start the second half at 10:55 Eastern time. So, we're going to be up pretty late watching that one. Sweet. Can't beat some late night.
If FAU loses that game, oh my God.
Bad sign. All right, let's wrap this thing up with the New Mexico prediction, man. What you got?
Oh, man. My gut says we win. And I think it's going to be a tougher game than any of us are expecting. I hope that I'm wrong. I hate doing score predictions, but I am going to do one. I say it's going to be 24-17.
Okay, I was going to say 24-14. So we're pretty close here. I just don't see...
It should be that close.
Right, it should be an easy blowout win. But I just don't see UTSA's offense really, you know, taking control and scoring at will. It would be a massive improvement week to week, so I would be shocked.
Yeah, until we see that, it's kind of hard to predict anything over 30 points. To predict the 30 point plus, you know, offensive output. The other thing I wonder about is, you want to do another prediction? How many fans do you think is going to show up on Saturday?
I can see about 31,000, 32,000, something like that. I don't think it's going to be empty. I think it's a good start at 2:30 on a Saturday. It's not going to be something great. I mean, we're not going to be in the high 30s by any means because we've lost these games. You know, had we beaten Arizona, close that one out, and then beat Florida Atlantic, I think we could look at almost hitting 40, but... Just the way the season's played out, I think it's going to discourage some of the lighter fans outside in San Antonio to not show up. But, I'm not totally worried about the attendance just nosediving. I think we'll still finish at the top of the conference no matter what happens.
I'd hope students show.
Yeah, man, we got to keep building that student section. So we'll see.
They were great against Arizona, and if they turn out like they did against Arizona on Saturday, I think it'll boost the team's morale
to be able
to come into that stadium when it's time for kickoff and see their students are there to support them, regardless of what's happened the last 3 weeks. So, you know, hopefully they turn out in droves like they did early in the season. So, but it's been a great podcast, my friend.
Yes, sir. Thanks for joining me, man. Hopefully next time we'll have better.
Always.
Yeah, hopefully next time we have you on, we'll have a better technical solution for this. Hopefully the MP3 doesn't sound too bad. We'll see. I'll do some magic on it and see what happens.
Cool.
All right, man. Well, I'll see you at the tailgate on Saturday.
Definitely. I'll be a little late, but I'll definitely be there.
All right.
I know Maddie and the tailgate SA guys will feed you guys well.
Yeah, for sure. I think we got some beer to drink. That's what I heard. That's what I've been told.
Unfortunately, I won't be able to drink on Saturday.
Oh, man. I'll have a couple for you. Don't worry. All right, Donald. Thanks for coming on,
you
man.
You can't take a game and go straight to a high school game. So.
Oh, I can't beat it. Just football all day. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. And we'll see you on Saturday. And hopefully we come out with a win.
All right.
All right, man. You have a good one. Thank you.
All right. You too.